from Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Earlier this month in Iowa City, a group of kids, some as young as 12 years old, were arrested during a gang initiation ritual. This hour, we'll talk about gang activity in Iowa and what's being done to stop it. We'll talk with the founder and CEO of Creative Visions in Des Moines, an organization that works with at-risk youth and families affected by gangs. We'll also talk with a detective at the Des Moines Police Department, a crime prevention officer with the Iowa City Police Department, and a former gang member who was just released from prison about a month ago. A look at gang activity in Iowa after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Earlier this month in Iowa City, a group of kids, some as young as 12 years old, were arrested during a gang initiation ritual. This hour, we'll talk about gang activity in Iowa and what's being done to stop it. Later in the hour, we'll hear details about that Iowa City incident from a member of the Iowa City Police Department. But first, we welcome onto our program State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad. He's a Democrat from Des Moines, also founder and CEO of Creative Visions, a nonprofit social service agency that works with at-risk youth and families affected by gangs in Des Moines. Good afternoon. Welcome to our program, State Representative Abdul-Samad.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Tell us more. What is about Creative Visions? What is it, and how did it get started?
Well, Creative Visions started actually in 1996 after, and God rest her soul, Phyllis Davis was shot to death on 9th and University. She was caught in a gang crossfire. Out of that, several individuals came and asked if we could address the issue because they wanted to do some development. We actually met with 14 of the gang leaders from different gangs. Out of that, 6 individuals said they want to change their lives. So we began developing, and Creative Visions was born.
Mm-hmm. So describe the gang scene in Des Moines in 1996, and then we'll talk about how it's changed since then.
And actually, at that time, you had the Vice Lords, the Crips, the Bloods, the Black Gangster Disciples, and some other gangs that in the African-American community. You had a large gang presence in the Latino community and the Asian community. And then you had basically white supremacist groups in the white community. And all of those factions were growing with leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. They also at that time were getting involved in illegal activity. And there was a lot of shootings that were taking place, and individuals were losing their lives.
Mm-hmm. And so sort of total gang membership in numbers would have been?
I'm not sure about how much, you know, how many, but it was quite a few. Because at that time, you know, it was just being able to take hold, take root into the Des Moines community. Because before then, the gang membership, it was hard for individuals to get established because in Des Moines, most of the individuals knew each other. So when we started then having, you know, a migration of individuals from Illinois, from St. Louis and other major urban cities, that's when it began to take root.
Mm-hmm. So the situation now in Des Moines?
The situation now in Des Moines is, and it's really unfortunate, that we have not yet been able to break the chain of hopelessness in that arena with that population. What we're seeing now, instead of the Black Gangster Disciples and the Vice Lords and the other groups that actually started off with a purpose and started off with a cause, now we're seeing their children and grandchildren that are involved with the different groups like the infamous Outlaws, the 360s, that are actually established because and not for a cause.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, too, is Des Moines the hot spot for gangs in the state, or are there several hot spots in the state?
Well, you have several hot spots now. You have Waterloo that has a large migration. You have Iowa City. You even have Dubuque that is having some gang problems right now.
Mm-hmm. I want to open our discussion to another participant in our discussion this hour. Joining us also from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines, Jeremy Trogdon is joining us today, a former gang member released from prison about a month ago. Welcome to our program, Jeremy.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Tell us, you were spent how long in Anamosa State Penitentiary, didn't you?
Yes, I spent I caught my case initially when I was 19 years old, and I just discharged it at the age of 30.
Mm-hmm. What were you sent to prison for?
Possession of a controlled substance and carrying a concealed weapon and an assault.
And you just got out a matter of days ago?
The 19th of last month, to be exact.
19th of May?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I discharged from Newton Correctional Facility.
What gang were you in?
I was a vice lord.
In the Des Moines area?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How did you come to join that gang?
Basically, I didn't join it. It was like, it's what I grew into, you know, the people I hung around, the area I grew up in, and that's what it was, you know.
So when did you first start, at what age did you first start with illegal activities in the Des Moines area?
My trials began at, like, the age of 13, you know. I lost the structure of my father. He was placed in incarceration. So, and my mother was also battling her own demons. So, you know, basically I was left to fend for myself.
Mm-hmm. So were you living basically out on the streets, or did you go home every day?
I've never been homeless because I got a lot of people, you know. So I've always had a place to stay. I've never been homeless. But I was on the streets practically 24 hours out of the day.
Give us an idea, those of us who have never been a member of a gang are really curious as to what is the draw, what is the appeal of belonging to a gang?
Well, I can give you a scenario. Say you have a young man and his family, you know, grew up. His father is a hard worker. His mother's a hard worker. He comes home to structure every night, you know. Got somebody to talk to. Well, a lot of youth in the community where I'm from, they don't have that structure to come home to. They don't have the people who feel like they care about them. So they go, you know, and look for that somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. So it's the yearning for a family, actually.
Basically, it's not necessarily a family, but it's yearning to be a part of, to feel like you belong, you know what I'm saying? Not to feel like an outcast, you know, a black sheep, a misfit, or whatever.
Yeah, but you can belong to a family, to a different group that's not your biological family, without doing illegal activity. So how does that fit in to the appeal?
Like, I live on 11th and Forest. I'm not finna go be a part of nobody's family who stay in Urbandale or Ankeny. You go over there and see them kids that's 13 playing. And you come over where I'm at and see the kids that's playing that's 13, and you tell me what you see in the difference. Mm-hmm. You know, it's. I'm not necessarily blaming on the environment, but it has a lot to do with it, you know. Got a lot to do with beliefs, what you was brought up believing, what your family believes. If I grew up in a household that's selling dope every day, all day, to me that's not wrong because that's what I grew up knowing. But to someone who didn't grow up like that, they see the wrong in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what it leads from.
So for someone in, as you've mentioned, Urbandale or Ankeny, a game of pickup basketball may be the thing to do. And for you, illegal activity, selling drugs.
Right. I want to do what the next person doing. You know what I'm saying? I don't want no holes in my shoes. You don't got your mom and dad ain't buying you shit because they ain't there, you know? Mm-hmm. So you got to do what you got to do, or else the world going to move with or without you.
You mentioned money. You mentioned money. How much money, how rich can you, well off can you be as a gang member in Des Moines?
I mean, I don't know. You could do the math. I mean, I can't. I'm not rich, so I couldn't answer that for you. I don't know.
I don't think I can do
how
the
rich
math.
You could be.
Yeah, I mean, how well off were you? What could you afford?
What could I afford? I could afford the things I like to do.
Which were?
I like enjoying time with my family. My daughters, like being able to pay bills, have nice clothes, you know, nothing out of the ordinary that an average human being would like.
You're in the studio with State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad. I want to turn to you, Representative Abdul-Samad, and ask you about your work with gang members. We have a take a break in a couple minutes. But you actually go out nights and talk with gang members in Des Moines. Can you tell us about an encounter you've had recently that may be insightful?
Well, I think to answer what you were, you know, addressing Jeremy with, is that we have always had young people develop a subculture. That sometimes that subculture is one that we don't want to accept or one that is threatening because we don't know. A lot of individuals, especially young people, and just recently when I was talking with one young man and one young lady, their bottom line was, we can't get a job. You know, we can't find employment for ourselves. And so, and that's just one component of it. It said, well, what kind of job are you looking for? And these are also individuals that have fallen through the cracks through the school system. So they're basically hanging out. These are individuals whose parents aren't much older than they are. So you have parents that did not know how to be parents because they have fallen through the cracks. So for them to address and develop economy for themselves, a stable, you know, funding source for themselves, they have to go out and do it the best way that they know how. So they go out and do that. So when they develop a system with underground economics, they don't realize the talent that they have actually now incorporated within their lives. And we don't recognize the talent that they have incorporated, nor are we showing them an alternative to that. Because for an individual to actually set up a marketing, you know, system that they can market their product, and we're saying even go crack cocaine, and then set up to be able to divide it, put it into the product so it can be sold from the 20 ounce to, from the 22 to 50, that type of thing, that takes skill. That also takes some math skill. But we don't look at it that way, you know, to be able to take that, and how do we turn that around? How do we now offer these young people another alternative? And a lot of people will look at us and say, well, every young person isn't like that. And we're saying we agree with that. What we had do at Creative Vision, that's the, one of our targeted populations. So we're not targeting the 4.0 student, you know, who also at some point, even with a good home and two parents and everything, may get involved with meth, you know, and find themselves involved with powder cocaine, you know, because the focus is on this individual that we deem, you know, and have categorized as being underprivileged. And we're not looking at the individual who, again, is in the same situation.
State Representative Abdul-Samad, we have to take a short break. Sorry for interrupting you, but we'll be right back with you. Please stay put. State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad joining us from Des Moines. State Representative of Democrat from Des Moines, founder and CEO of Creative Visions. Also, Jeremy Trogdon, former gang member, just released from prison a few days ago. If you have questions or comments, 1-866-780-9100. If you've ever been part of a gang, tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. We'll be back in 1 minute. We're back with The Exchange talking about gang activity in Iowa. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us over the noon hour. My guests in this first half hour, State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad, a Democrat from Des Moines, also founder and CEO of Creative Visions. That's an organization, a nonprofit organization that works with at-risk youth and families involved in gang activity. Also with us, Jeremy Trogdon, a former gang member who was just released from prison last month in May. Your questions, comments, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you've been personally affected by gang violence. Perhaps you've been part of a gang at one time in your life. Tell us your story, 1-866-780-9100. Or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about possible solutions here. Creative Visions has been working towards improving the situation, stemming gang activity in the state since 1996, since you mentioned the violent death of Phyllis Davis, which was the seed to starting Creative Visions. So how do we stop or stem, at least, gang activity in Iowa? Representative Abdul-Samad.
One of the best examples that I can actually talk about is last summer, the Des Moines Police Department and juvenile court officers came to us and asked us to, you know, if we could be an intervention with some of the young people that they were working with. We did that. We stepped out. Our counselor and coordinator for our Outside the Box program, Donald Newton and Keona Ward Taylor, we got together and we were able to come up with the help of United Way, a summer program. And we took 25 of some of these youth. We brought them into a summer program. We didn't give them a job, but we were able to pay them a stipend each week. The leaders got $50, the participants got $25, and we worked with them the whole summer. Then we had, you know, them determine some projects that they could give back to the community. But we gave them self-worth. We talked about life skills. We talked about the academics, how important it was to stay in school. The bottom line to this story is that they end up adopting the fifth grade class over at Moton Elementary School to help set up a literacy library. They did fundraiser to help buy books to establish this library. And out of 25, we had 23 that went on to school. We lost two out of that 25 that went back to the street. But we did take 23 of these young people who are still in school today, still are proud, and they came up with a slogan that was really awesome, along with, you know, a couple other organizations, the African American Leadership Coalition, the Boys and Girls Club, and a couple, and Creative Vision, with a slogan that's real simple: drop in, not out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's given ownership, you know, and meeting them on their level, and to the point of saying, this is the direction that we can go, but talking with them and not at them, and recognizing that these are young human beings.
Jeremy Trogdon, you're 30 years old, I believe, former gang member, just released from prison about a month ago. You've spent a good deal of your life behind bars. What do you think is the key to keeping kids out of gangs?
I believe that not only do you have to reach to the children, you also have to reach to adults, you know what I'm saying? Because a child can't lead an adult, and if you throw an adult around children and that adult can't think positively for themselves, they're going to lead that child down the wrong path. And I say that because when I just was released from the penitentiary, and in there, it's like society gave up on everybody. Then once people get out, you know what I'm saying, they go back to what they know. So I believe that we as a people, if we care about our children, we also need to care about the parents, you know what I'm saying, because a child can't take care of itself. So we need to reach back into them, into the system, and show individuals who made mistakes, such as myself, that, you know, your voice does matter and your ideas are worth having, you know what I'm saying? So That's what I believe. We need to reach back and not just give up and wash your hands with people.
Jeremy, why are you on this program today? Why did you agree to be a guest?
Because one of my friends asked me, he needed me to talk, and I came.
Mm-hmm. What would you like people to get out of why you're on this program, of what you have to say? What's the takeaway?
Basically, a lot of people make mistakes in life, you know what I'm saying? You can't judge a person off of what they say they're going to do. You have to take the actions into consideration. And basically what I want everybody to know is that if somebody's trying to do good and better themselves, help that person out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They may have made mistakes in the past or whatever, but it's worth helping somebody out, because you never know who that person is willing to help out or who they can reach. Just like Akel came got me, I could reach people that you can never talk to. I could talk to them. Vice versa. You talk to people, my voice is being heard by people who would never hear it if it wasn't for you. So just take advantage of the opportunities.
You've served your time. How much of a concern is it to you that you be pulled back into the gang scene in Des Moines or another large city?
The concern for me right now is I'm not worried about no gang. You know what I'm saying? I'm 30 years old. I've been running through life with no shoes on, and my feet hurt. You know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to better myself, get out of my comfort zone, because my comfort zone ends me in uncomfortable places. So That's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying something new.
What would you tell someone listening to this program who is involved in a gang or has a sees a gang as an appealing path, a young person?
I would tell a young person, you know, think with your heart because your heart always leads you right. Don't go with your mind, you know what I'm saying? Because in your mind, you'll trick yourself into believing whatever you want. You know, as a human being, you have naturally inside of you, when you're born with it, right and wrong, you know what I'm saying? So just follow your heart. If you're going to choose to go down that path, know that it's a lot, it's a bumpy road, you know what I'm saying? And it ain't no pearly gates on the other side. It's rotten. It stinks. It's hell. It's everything on the other side of them gates.
State Representative Akail Abdul-Samad, what can be done at a state level in terms of new laws? I understand that you have no problem with a statewide curfew.
Right. I think to the point, when you're traveling out and you see young people that are 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13, there needs to be a curfew to that point, you know, that we have. I have no problem.
And you see it around midnight, you see ages of 8, 9, 10, 12.
To 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And they need to be home. You know, they need to be at home. The parent needs to be there. But we also must make the parent accountable, you know, at that point. But I think a law needs to be passed, statewide law, curfew, with an age limit on there, so that we send children back home and parents have to be responsible for those children to be there. I also think that if the child isn't there, we just can't penalize the child. We also need to penalize the parent.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to start letting parents be parents again. And we can, you know, if a parent is scared to say anything because they're scared the child is going to call 911 on them, then we have to be able to leave the discretion to police, to the workers, that this child is calling 911 because this child is being disciplined. This child is being disciplined because there's a law that this 13-year-old needs to be in the house by 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm. We have just about a minute left, but how do we get to this position where parents, as you see it, are not held as accountable as they should be?
And I guess I can sum it up. We came a long time ago talking about it takes the village to raise a child, which I totally agree, but we forgot to add the other caveat. The caveat to that, it takes the village to raise a child only if the village recognizes its own ills. We put individuals on a back burner and act like they did not exist in our communities. Now that same subculture is coming to bite us because we ignored them. We wrote a check. The check was no good. Now young people are coming to cash that check. We have to go back to some basics to address the issue of our communities and what we need to do. We can't have the schools do it all. We can't blame it on the parents. We have to do it as a community. And let me close with this real quick.
Very quickly, I mean, please. We're running out of time.
Okay. How many times do you even see a blue star on a door anymore? Well, we had a program where we had blue, where kids could even go to. The community is scared to address the issues that we're talking about now.
State Representative Akail Abdul-Samad, a Democrat from Des Moines, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Jeremy Trogdon, thank you very much for sharing your views as well.
Thank you.
And when we come back on The Exchange, we'll have two others to talk about, continue our discussion about gang activity in Iowa. If you'd like to join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us over the noon hour today. And tomorrow on this program at this time, we'll have conversations with Iowa State University President Gregory Joffre, University of Northern Iowa President Ben Allen, a conversation with him as well. I'll ask the presidents how the decrease in state appropriations is affecting the universities. Also, remember the panic over the recent near implosion of the Big 12 conference? We'll talk about the role of collegiate athletics in the overall financial welfare of our state universities tomorrow when we welcome two university presidents to our program on The Exchange. Today, talking about gang violence. Earlier this month in Iowa City, a group of kids, some as young as 12 years old, were arrested during a gang initiation ritual this hour. That's why also one of the reasons we're talking about gang activity in Iowa. what causes it, what's being done to stop it. I want to welcome to our program right now Jory Bailey, Crime Prevention Officer with the Iowa City Police Department. Welcome to our studio this afternoon, Jory.
Thank you for having me.
Officer Bailey, excuse me if I can do that. Mike Stukrat is with us as well, detective with the Des Moines Police Department since 1985, also Vice President of the Iowa Chapter of Midwest Gang Investigators Association in our Des Moines studio. Detective Stukrat, welcome to our program.
Thanks for being here.
Jory Bailey, let me turn to you, Officer Bailey, first of all, to talk about this June 12th Iowa City incident. It happened, I understand, about 10 p.m. Take us through what happened, the incident, and the juveniles that you discovered.
Well, first of all, the juveniles were five that we had previously dealt with last year when we had a lot of juvenile criminal activity occurring here in Iowa City. On the occasion in June, officers recognized juveniles on the street corner, recognized that they were involved in a bit of a verbal argument, and confronted those juveniles. Upon further investigation, they found that these juveniles were previously involved in activities we had last year and were known to be members of our local juvenile gang, the Broadway Goons. Upon further investigation into the incident itself, the officers determined that the juveniles involved were actually jumping in another member.
Okay, so jumping in, is that the ritual that we're talking about, the gang
right.
ritual?
Right.
What is jumping in?
Jumping in is basically initiating a new member via fighting, whether verbal, and in this case it was verbal, and the officers were had determined that it was clearly moving towards the physical route, but jumping in is basically fighting in a new member.
Mm. So the member has to prove himself, has to do something to become a full member?
Essentially, yes.
Is that what's going on? So what was the outcome of that? Where are these juveniles now?
Five juveniles were all charged with criminal gang participation, and I believe criminal gang recruitment, and they have each been subsequently released to a detention center.
I'm looking at their names on my notes here. Also the ages, 13, 12, 14, 15. These are young kids. What motivates kids of this age to be in a gang?
You know, these kids, I believe, you know, as Jeremy said, one of your previous guests, I think a lot of these kids are lacking a strong role model at home, especially these really young kids that don't necessarily have that role model at home. They're reaching out for that family unit, which they may be able to obtain through gang activity.
Mike Stukrath with the Des Moines Police Department. A good portion of your job is working with gangs and narcotics, as I understand it. How are those two connected?
They all go hand in hand. You know, you have the gangs, the drugs, the money, and the guns all seem to be the common denominator for gang activity.
Mm-hmm. How much of a connection is there, for instance, between the Des Moines gang scene and the Iowa City gang scene? Are they sort of enclosed, or they reach out to each other a lot of, or Chicago or St. Louis? How many connections are there?
You know, we're seeing what we call, I'm assuming in Iowa City, I'm not familiar with the case, but we have several examples of gang activity where they form a gang. It might be a street name from a particular neighborhood and call them a certain gang. And we in law enforcement call that hybrid gang. So they are adapting to different beliefs and values within the gang and form their own gang and have identifying signs and symbols and markings and off they go. But mm-hmm.
Are they simply emulating what they see in larger cities around the country, actually springing from our soil, or is there some way an orchestration of gang recruitment happening in Des Moines and Iowa City and Waterloo that is orchestrated from larger cities?
You know, in the early 80s or late 80s when we first started having the gang problem, we had the traditional Chicago-based gangs, the California-based gangs, and now up to the late 90s to present, we're seeing These gangs that don't have the traditional philosophy beliefs of the original street gangs, and then they kind of go out of the boundaries to form their own little groups and cliques within their organization.
Mm-hmm. How much Jory Bailey talked about the lack of family structure. How big of a problem do you see? How much of a cause do you see that as? Or is it simply trying to get rich on by selling drugs and so forth?
You know, again, I think everybody's talked about this poor self-esteem, sense of belonging, little or no family structure. Oftentimes we see parents working multiple jobs, and there is no one home for these kids to come home for. You know, we have some recent examples of – we have a gentleman that was arrested for graffiti. The mom has begged us now to follow through, make sure that her son is on probation. Well, we arrested him. He had a spray paint can, gang drawings, and also an award from a school that he was getting at the year end for his good activities and such. And the parents nor the kid were able to attend because they were had to work to provide for the family. And if they did show up, they would be, you know, punished and be fired. So that's a kind of an example here recently.
If you've just joined us, my guest this half hour, as we talk about gang activity in Iowa, a detective with the Des Moines Police Department, Mike Stukrath, and he's also the vice president of the Iowa City chapter of the Midwest Gang Investigators Association. Also, Jory Bailey, crime prevention officer with the Iowa City Police Department. If you have a question or a comment, or you have some involvement or have been personally affected by gang violence, tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Has your community, has your neighborhood been affected by the emergence of gangs in Iowa since the 1980s? 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. I think, if I'm judging this right, gentlemen, that a lot of our listeners are more or less blind to gang violence in Iowa, whether you live in Iowa City or Des Moines. Perhaps you just don't go to those parts of town. Jory Bailey, do you think that's the case, that a lot of us don't know we have the gang problem that we do?
I think so. I you know, unless it generally, and this is my finding in crime prevention as a whole, you know, unless something specifically affects a person or directly affects someone, they're really not going to be involved. And oftentimes, you know, the people haven't been affected by the actions of a gang, or they haven't been affected by the actions of some of, in Iowa City, our youth groups or these youth gangs. So they may be kind of blind to the fact that they're out there, other than what they hear in the media.
Mm-hmm. Mike Stukrath, do you have any statistics on how much of the violence or illegal activity is within gangs and how much of it affects those who are not in gangs?
You know, here's an example. Talk about graffiti. When you look at graffiti, gang graffiti is kind of the newspaper of the street. We're averaging about 1,300 graffiti cases a year. And it's kind of like the precursor of gang activity. You know, no one wants to live in the neighborhood. No one wants to buy a house. Values go down.
How is graffiti used by gangs?
They mark their boundaries and territories with their symbols. It's like the newspaper street. It tells a message to a rival gang member that this is who they are. It might be their monikers or nicknames.
Mm-hmm. So is part of the solution simply getting out there and removing graffiti? Does that do any good?
We encourage we have a gang hotline in Des Moines, and we encourage people to call that, and it's cleaned up by our City of Des Moines Parks Department. You simply do not want to leave that graffiti up in the neighborhood.
Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Tom joining us from Iowa City. Good afternoon, Tom. What's on
Hi,
your
Ben.
Mind?
I was wondering, I told your receiver there, that what is the motivation for young people from large cities to come to the state of Iowa, to smaller cities? I had heard once that social benefits are easier to achieve in the state of Iowa than some of the surrounding states, and that might be the motivation, but I don't know if that was just a rumor or not.
Okay, Mike Stuckrath, how many gang members do we get from out of state who are migrating to our state for whatever reason?
You know, we're seeing a lot of where families moved from, for example, California, come to Iowa because we have some work available, unlike some of the other states that with the economy the way it is. But oftentimes these gang members and families move to get away from the gang life and think, you know, Des Moines is a great city, Iowa is a great state, and to have this wholesome living and get away from the gang activity. And oftentimes when they come here, they bring that gang activity, the gang mentality with them, and kind of fester again and start that gang membership all over again.
Do you have an example you can point to in recent?
Yeah, we had a recent example of a guy from California who was involved in a stabbing at a local convenience store. He fled. He was wanted on $750,000 worth of warrants out of the state of California. He came to Des Moines to live with relatives, and he changed his appearance and his identity and lived here probably 6 or 8 months. We got a tip from California that he was in Des Moines. We started working with authorities and developed some leads, and he was arrested back in April, and he's back in California waiting trial.
Officer Jory Bailey of the Iowa City Police Department, let me have you address this. What kind of migration do you see from out of state to Iowa? Gang members perhaps trying to leave that life behind, coming from L.A. Or larger cities, winding up in Iowa City?
Well, we do see a migration to Iowa City, and not necessarily for gang activity. We see a lot of single mothers coming to Iowa City trying to escape, you know, the life they had someplace else, and coming, you know, understanding that Iowa is a different place to live. It's a, you know, we talked about the village, and raising it takes a village to raise a kid, and we kind of had that mentality here in Iowa. But a lot of the activity that we see from our youth, you know, they weren't involved in these things someplace else. They may come here and, you know, especially even some of the adults, they may be a big fish in a small pond now. And although they weren't you know, big members of the gangs in a larger city, here, you know, they like I said, they can be a big fish here, and they can try to be larger than they may have been. But for the most part, the youth that come here, the youth gangs that we have, they are, you know, their parents are coming here to escape something or to get away from the life that they had someplace else and to make their life better, to make their lives, the lives of their kids better.
Mm-hmm. Detective Stuckrath mentioned the economic downturn as playing a part in here. Do you see here in Iowa City where you are, the economic downturn playing a role in having people migrate to the state, to Iowa City area?
You know, I can't. I guess I can't speak specifically to that. I don't have numbers on that. You know, we've had people coming to Iowa City for ever since I've been here for 9 years, and I think it's to escape, or not to escape. And I'm sorry for using that term, but to create a better life for themselves. And if the job outlook is better here in Iowa City, then, you know, that's great. And we certainly encourage people coming for employment. So I guess I can't really speak to the economic side of it, but it's been happening since I've been here, you know, for the last 9 years.
Earlier in our program, we had State Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad. Also, he's the founder and CEO of Creative Visions, a nonprofit organization that works in your area, Detective Stuckrath, as a nonprofit, going out and talking to gang members, trying to solve some problems. How do you, in the police department, work with community organizations to stop the spread of gangs?
There's a couple examples. Within the Des Moines Police Department, we have two programs I'd like to talk about. One would be the UNRA program, which is a Hispanic Outreach Neighborhood Resource Center, and that's at 618 East 18th. It's a St. Peter's Church, and we have two Hispanic officers that are there on Tuesdays and Thursdays after hours or after work, where they meet with Hispanic families about issues with their kids. were involved in traffic accidents, whatever. And oftentimes they get into this problem where my son's involved in a gang. What do we do? What do we do? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we meet with the officers there.
And in a specific example, what do you see as the most successful intervention? What type of intervention happens where you can say, we headed off, we changed the path there for a young individual?
I think the earlier the better. You know, if we can get the message to these kids earlier, once they're in junior high, towards the 7th, 8th grade, you know, we're going to start losing them.
Mm-hmm. And they ignore or try to evade that. And you have to provide, you have to recognize that they have a lack of what, family structure, and work with that, with the community organization.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, the other example would be we have the Des Moines Boxing Club that's on the east side of Des Moines that the kids are working with the an officer there. And they have to kind of sign a waiver or kind of go by that they're not going to be involved in any gang activity as part of their entrance into the program.
1-866-780-9100, concluding our hour in the next few minutes. We're talking about gang activity in Iowa. We still have a few minutes. We could get a call or email in, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Julie. Julie, where are you calling from?
Iowa City.
Good afternoon. What do you have to add to our discussion today?
Well, I read a book some years ago called Do or Die, which was written by a woman named Leon Bing. And she spent a lot of time with the Crips and the Bloods in Los Angeles, which are two rival gangs. And she spoke to the gang members directly, and it was so poignant and so shocking what she uncovered. Basically, what your first guest said, the young man who had just been released from prison, they're looking for a community. They're looking for everything else that everybody else in the world is looking for: security, connection, a comfortable life. And so I just wanted to mention that book is a really good book, just as a backdrop for people to read if they're interested in understanding that gang mentality and dynamic. The other thing I wanted to mention is that here in Iowa City, you know, we have a lot of families that have moved in from Chicago, and a lot of them are single moms, I'm generalizing here, who are looking for a better life for their children. They come here, and yes, there are social services, but they have to work two or three jobs. The children don't have the structure and supervision that they need, and so they look outside for that. And I think that overall, we're not really giving these women credit for what they've done. They've picked up their families. They've moved from communities and churches and other places to find a better life for their children. And I really wish that Iowa had a little more diversity, a little more people of color, so that we could understand and open our arms a little bit more to that faction of society. And also the kids that do live here are from Iowa and are African American, don't get profiled in department stores or on the street just because they're black doesn't mean they're in a gang. So those were my comments, and thank you very much.
Julie, calling from Iowa City, thank you very much. We have just a couple minutes left. I wanted to wind up with the thought and asking our guest today about what we as average, let's just call ourselves average Iowans, Iowa citizens of Iowa City, of Des Moines, Grinnell, wherever we may be in Waterloo. Of course, you need to report gang violence, illegal activity. The best thing to do is to turn to your local police department. Past reporting illegal activity or suspicious activity, Jory Bailey, what can we do if we're concerned citizens and want to help stem the tide of gang activity in Iowa?
Well, those programs that have worked here in Iowa City have involved strong leadership in the neighborhoods, block captains, places for whether it's youth or adults who need assistance, whether it's a single mother, places for them to go, people for them to ask questions to, people who can, you know, watch their kids if they have to
volunteer
go to work.
For a community organization that is helping single
sure.
mothers.
Volunteerism is great, but also, you know, that strong leadership that mentoring programs are always looking for leadership. They're always looking for mentors. In Iowa City, we need strong leadership specifically in the neighborhoods to help newcomers coming into our city, help them connect with our city and help them feel that they're a member of our community.
Mike Stuckrath, tell us what your thoughts on how the average Iowan can help stem the tide of gang activity here.
Again, we have a neighborhood programs in Des Moines. We have a neighborhood divided up in various districts, and everybody's supervised by a sergeant. And they have daily or weekly meetings about the neighborhoods and be involved in the community, you know, whether it's cleaning up your neighborhood, getting rid of the graffiti, repairing streetlights, that type of thing. And those open avenues to the neighborhood and makes it a nice place to live.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time today and your views today. Mike Stuckrath is a detective with the Des Moines Police Department and also a vice president of the Iowa chapter of Midwest Gang Investigators Association. Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jory Bailey, crime prevention officer with the Iowa City Police Department, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
The Exchange is produced by Alex Hoyer, Catherine Perkins, Lindsay Moon, and Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Rosalind Sixby. Technical support from Julie Englander. We always welcome your comments and questions, perhaps suggestions about another focus for a program. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email address. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.